See anything you like?
Have you all got amnesia? They just cheated us!
That's how we get you, Barbara.
You got a death curse!
It was a shark.
Little pig, let me come in.
Go a little mad sometimes.
What was living behind that boy's eyes was purely and simply evil.
I'm just gonna bash your brains.
You're Cinescare.
Welcome to the Cinescare podcast. I am one of your hosts, Matt Speak.
And I am also one of your hosts, Joe Jans.
That was a bad time to take a sip. Joe. And with us as always, actually for the first time in almost a month, well, I guess for us anyway, is the super fan, Mr. Mark Biscotti.
Hello, everybody. Did you miss me? Because I missed you, my loyal listeners. How are you? I missed you. It's me. I'm back.
This is where you put crickets in.
That's the reaction I get? What the fuck?
Oh, I don't have crickets. I'll just do
this. That's kind of good.
That's the best I can do. Yeah.
That's kind of good, though, Joe. That's a good
one. Not bad, Joe. Actually, I'll give you a smattering of applause.
Ooh. Yeah.
Well, I got to say, it was a great episode without me. I mean, I enjoy
it
watching.
It was.
Not watching, listening. I like listening to Cinescare episodes when I'm not on it because I don't have to, you know, hear my dumbass talk. And it's fun to hear Cinescare, you know, what it originally was, you know, 12 episodes before I was even, you know, involved. So I enjoyed it. I listened to it twice. And I hardly ever listen to the episodes that, you know, that I'm on.
Nice.
Yeah.
Thanks, it was a good episode. Thank you, George Stryker, for joining us last time. It was a good episode, and it was a nice to hear the musical side of the industry and to hear his music. He obviously is wildly talented and was blessed with the funds, I guess, to make his own album too, because that couldn't have been cheap to hire a orchestra, I would imagine. But
right,
and it was fun to talk about The Blob too. 1988.
Right. Great film. Talking about The Blob. Yeah.
It's a great film. It sucks that I wasn't able to talk about it, but I could talk about it now. Well, no. We already talked about it, but I can't believe you guys didn't talk about they actually killed a kid. I love that part.
Yeah, I don't know. Didn't
what do you mean you
strike
don't know?
Us as something to talk about, I guess.
They killed the kid. The Blob killed the kid in the sewers, remember?
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. Just. Doesn't killing kids not really my thing.
Yeah. It's my thing.
As we all know.
We all know, yeah. Hates kids.
So Joe, what did you watch?
Hey, Matt. I watched a few things.
Yeah.
First of which has nothing to do with horror, just to appease Mark, I watched the remake of Roadhouse.
Atta boy. Where the fuck is he?
Somebody needs to teach Conor McGregor how to walk like they didn't forget to put the coat hanger still in his coat.
No, it's great.
He walks goofy. I would never say that to his face because I have a brain in my head and that's where I like to keep it. But that was one of the things that I watched. It was entertaining. It was a good way to waste 2 hours. But back onto the horror stuff. I did finally get a chance to watch Stop Motion. I absolutely loved it. It's tremendous. It's my favorite movie of the year so far.
Yep. Mine too.
I also watched another new movie to this year called Slay, which I believe was on Shudder, I think.
Oh.
Did you guys hear about this or watch this?
I haven't heard of it, no.
Maybe it was on Tubi. No. Anyway, it's a horror comedy. It's about these four drag queens that take a wrong turn or they get booked at the wrong club. And so they're supposed to be doing this performance for a bunch of rednecks. And something happens where one of them starts to turn into one of the townsfolk. They start turning into vampires. And so it's up to the remaining townsfolk to bond together with the drag queens to help kill all the vampires and then escape. It's extremely predictable. Some of the jokes were funny. It's not very well made. It's certainly not very well written. But that being said, I had a fun time watching it. It was, you know, I smirked at most of the jokes. They were pretty funny. So anyway, that's called Slay. It's something I watched for 2024 and didn't cost a dime. But nice. Lastly, my favorite, Shudder, right? I think it's on Shudder. I'll have to look it up. I can't remember if it was Shudder or if it was Tubi. No, I am mistaken. It is on Tubi. It is a Tubi original, as a matter of fact.
Lovely. Oh,
nice. Yeah, because I looked, I went through Shudder yesterday because I'm off this week from work. And I went through Shudder yesterday. And I didn't see anything like that. I saw a couple new things that I plan to watch this week. But
yeah. Well, when I want quality horror, I go to Tubi first. So that's where you'll find
go
it.
Go to Tubi. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
I forget about Tubi sometimes. Yeah. And I think they're stepping up their originals game, I think. From
Yeah, I agree with that. I'm on Tubi at least three times a week. I think Tubi's phenomenal.
It's great.
Yeah.
And then back to horror that you'll find on Shudder. I watched You'll Never Find Me. Did either of you guys watch this?
No, that's one that I am definitely marked to watch this week.
Yeah, me too.
Pardon my French, but about it. Fucking phenomenal. It's
nice.
It's in a pretty dead heat with stop motion on my list for the year.
Oh, shit.
Wow. Yeah. I'll give you the general synopsis. It's a guy that lives alone in a trailer. And there's a knock at the door and it's some girl. There's like storm of the centuries going on outside, just abysmal outside. Knock on the door during the storm. It's this girl who basically she asks for a ride, but his car is kind of broken down. So as they try to figure out how to get her home, he invites her into the trailer for the night. And as things progress, you don't know who to trust. Is it him that's all messed up, or maybe it's the girl that's all messed up? You just don't know. It is very, very intense and tense. Fantastic film. You guys really need to watch this. It's short too. It's like an hour and a half. Not very long at all.
Yeah, cool.
Matt,
sorry. Muted. I know. I just noticed that. Yeah, I was actually. I answered my own question. I was like, what's it called again? And I was like, oh, You'll Never Find Me.
Yeah.
That's right.
You'll never find me. Yeah. But that's a Shudder original. It's tremendous. The guy who's the lead is just, he needs to be in a lot more things. He's wonderful. Nice. I mean, the girl that comes knocking on, I mean, small cast, there's like three people in the whole film and it all takes place in a trailer. So wonderful film. Can't wait for you guys to see that.
Yeah. And, I'm going to watch it tonight.
Great. That about does it for me.
Nice. Mark, what did you watch?
Well, I went to see Ghostbusters, Frozen Empire.
Was it good?
I liked it better than The Afterlife. So that's saying something. But it's not the Ghostbusters I know. It's the original and sequel that I love. The rest is just not for me. There are too many characters in this film, and it just bogs it down. It's either get rid of the nostalgia, get rid of the legendary characters and focus on the originals, or go with the legendary characters because there's too many characters and it really bogs down the film. The middle of the film is really bogged down. It gets a little tiresome. There's just too many nostalgia things now. It's like, I know we need, you know, it's like with nostalgia, you know, you can't cut, you know, just cold turkey with nostalgia. We love it. We love the originals. But it's either stop with the nostalgia and move on with the new characters or go with the legendary. With that being said, the girl Phoebe, who plays Spangler's daughter, is phenomenal in this movie. I love this actress. I forgot the name of the actress, but I think she's great, and she's so good in this film. The beginning of this film starts off great. The beginning, the opening sequence is phenomenal. It's back in the day in New York with these firefighters. It's really eerie. It's really scary. And then it hits the, you know, the present, and it just big action sequence. And it's a lot of fun. You know, it's great. You're back in New York. They got a drone that is a ghost trap, which is kind of cool to see. And they're chasing after this ghost that's kind of, like a fish kind of dragon kind of thing. But it's fun to watch. Ernie Hudson's great in it. He plays this, you know, he's like the CEO. I don't know, like, what money he's making, you know, supporting Ghostbusters or whatnot. I'm also having a problem with the little marshmallow guys. I don't know why they keep the Stay Puft marshmallow little guys. They keep bringing it in. It's like they look like minions now. It's just too much. It's like, stop. They stop the whole film. It's like the whole pace just stops. It's going, let's go back to nostalgia. Let's go see Slimer. Oh, Slimer's back. Why is Slimer in it? I mean, the last time we saw Slimer, he was, in a containment box. It's like they don't explain why all of a sudden he's back. He's just out. Bill Murray is great when you see him. He's got his one-liners, but I mean, you see him just collecting a paycheck now, and it's like go with the legendary or go with the new cast. I don't mind the new cast. You know, I think the new cast has too many characters as it is, like that podcast kid. No reason for him to be in it. But I did enjoy it better than The Afterlife. I just think they need to, you know, separate from either one now. If they're going to make a third out of this trilogy, I say get rid of, the legendary cast. Dan Aykroyd, it was fun to see him. He's more of, you know, he just like the glory days and him, you know, getting back into Ghostbusters. It was fun to see that, but you don't see enough of him. You see, it's just too much nostalgic stuff. And then the main plot, it seems to be moving around the nostalgic, you know, pieces. And if they just combine it and just condense it without all the nostalgic, it would be good. But I do recommend the film. If you're a Ghostbusters fan, I think it's worth seeing in the movie theater. Give it some support. And then, of course, I saw Late Night with the Devil. I'm going to wait for Matt to introduce that one.
Was that all you watched?
Yeah,
okay. For horror.
Yeah.
Okay. I have a few. I did, because it was quite a while ago that we actually recorded, because we recorded the last interview like the week after our last episode. So it's been a while. I did watch Wrath of Becky, which was okay. You know, it's pretty good. I enjoyed it. It's, you know, you can't go wrong when you're killing Nazis. It's, you know, that's fun. Monolith, which I know is sort of borderline horror. It is about a woman who is a podcaster, who's basically a journalist who is disgraced. It doesn't really go into why she's disgraced, but it has something to do with a series that she did about someone, and it turned out that it wasn't what her take on it was untrue. So she was sort of disgraced, and her trying to find a new story to come back. And it's all one person. I believe this was probably a COVID movie. I think it's all just one person. Might've been a couple other people here and there, but generally it's mostly 99% one woman in a house and in a one setting. And she receives an email from someone about people having received these blocks. They're like these little monolith is like the black monolith from 2001: A Space Odyssey, but they're smaller. They're about the size of maybe smaller than a shoebox, but somewhere in there. And people just receive them and they don't know who from. And there's some idea of it sort of being an alien conspiracy. It's interesting. It's definitely more of a psychological thriller than straight horror. And I'm not sure that it really is horror, but it is on my 2024 list because it just came out this year, even though I think it went through festivals for a couple of years. So, but anyway, definitely worth checking out if you're really into something very lo-fi and it's more sci-fi than horror and also more psychological thriller probably. And then I saw Love Lies Bleeding, and I only mentioned this, but I don't think it is horror. I only mention it because it's being, I know it's been promoted or posted on a lot of horror sites, but it really, if this is horror, then True Romance is a horror movie. You know, like it's that kind of, it's more of a crime thriller than a horror movie, but I think it's because of, it might be produced by A21 or someone like that. So it's being, I know, I'm sorry, A24. Did I say A21? A24. But so I know it's being like, if you look at a lot of horror websites and horror pages and that sort of thing, they're all promoting it quite a bit. But to me, it's really not a horror movie. There's some graphic violence, but I don't know. I think we're kind of getting into an area where every time there's a movie with graphic violence, it's considered horror. And I wouldn't, but that's up to you. It's definitely worth checking out, though. I really enjoyed it. It's wild. It's crazy. It's definitely worth checking out. And then again, I'll bring up Late Night with the Devil, and I think Mark and I probably felt the same way about it. I liked it. I didn't. I was really hoping to love it, and I didn't come away from it loving it. And I kind of felt like it was an interesting concept, but I felt like the same way I felt about, and Joe, before I saw it, Joe said that he looked at it and he thought it seemed a bit like Ghost Watch. And it's not the same story, but I thought the acting was very similar to Ghost Watch, where I didn't find it believable. Mm-hmm. I didn't feel like they were really having it's all set in a talk show. And this guy is a talk show host who's competing with Johnny Carson. And he's kind of come and his success has ebbed and waned, and so he is trying to have a big Halloween special. He brings on this girl who's supposedly possessed, and her parapsychologist, and then there's a skeptic guy there too, and they try to get in touch with the demon that's inside of her. So there are some. I thought that there were some effective moments in there and some creepy parts maybe, but the conversation, the interview conversation didn't feel like a real talk show to me. It felt like stilted. I don't know about stilted, but it definitely felt like it didn't seem believable, like it was a real conversation. It mm-hmm. didn't seem natural.
Yeah.
And then there were some backstage scenes, but they didn't make sense to me. Like at the beginning, it says that what you're seeing is the actual footage of that episode that night, plus some backstage footage of backstage conversations. But the backstage conversations are shot like a regular movie. They're not, you don't get the sense that it's a handheld camera that's following people around and it's found footage. It's shot like a movie. So I'm like, wait a minute. Nobody, especially back then, nobody's shooting backstage footage like this, you know, right. And the characters are all having conversations. If they knew a camera was there, they wouldn't be having them, you know, so that bothered me. And so it kind of took me out of it. It was hard for it. I don't know if it took me out of it, but it was hard for me to invest in it because I didn't believe a lot of it. I like the main guy, you know, the actor, David Dastmalchian, I think is how you pronounce his name. And I thought he was pretty good. And that's a tough role to play. But I didn't really believe a lot of the other people. I thought that the girl was a little bit overdone. And I still liked it. I think I sound like I'm being harsher on this than I really felt about it. Because I did,
You sound like an apologist.
No, once we got to the halfway mark, I did get into it more, but yeah. I think my expectations were really a lot higher, and I was so that disappointed me a bit. And then, of course, there is the whole controversy of them using AI to make some of the, you know, in the old talk shows, they would have a card that would say "more to come" with some graphic on it. And for this, instead of having a graphic artist design those, they had AI. And so there's kind of a bit of a controversy about that. I don't think it wasn't obvious that those cards were made by AI or anything, but knowing that, I do see the problem with that, because that means somebody, they didn't.
What did it save them? What did it save them? Right, what did it
exactly gain? Hardly. Yeah, I mean, probably nothing.
Yeah.
I mean, you could have done any of those tarot cards really easy. Yeah. You know,
they had enough production companies on this, because the number at the beginning of the movie for each production company,
like 15,
there was a title opening for each of them. And there must have been 15, I bet. And I mean, yeah. The audience, that was a horrible way to start it off, because the audience started laughing at how many production companies are producers of this. Our audience started laughing, and we were like, what the hell? How many different? And every single one had their own graphic, and I don't know how long it went on, but it seemed like a long time before we got to the actual movie. Once they get past all those, they do it again in the credits. They show each one of them. It's crazy. But
there was a funny gentleman a couple rows in front of me that was going, "That's four. That's five." And the audience was chuckling.
Were we executive producers on that one?
We could have been.
Maybe. We could have been. Yeah,
I lost track. Yeah, yeah.
But I had the faint, you know, the same feelings, same as Matt. I went into this theater with high expectations after watching that trailer. It's a phenomenal trailer, and so my expectations were really high. And it didn't match. I agree with everything that Matt said. I didn't think the girl was, you know, over the top or a little bit too much. I thought that the girl was really good at her staring in the camera and whatnot. I just think the pacing was a little bit off. I think Joe's going to love the Ed McMahon character a lot, because it's just so corny, and I just the deliveries of his line. I don't know if he was like supposed to, you know, play it that way, but it was really over the top and so dry, and I don't even know if it was good acting, but it was just so awkward every time he talked. And I guess that, you know, kind of made sense with the Ed McMahon character. But I did somewhat like the ending to it. I liked the reveal. I've never seen that kind of reveal before, as we saw Matt with the fire. You know, I don't want to ruin it, but I've never seen that portrayal of something like that before. So that was really neat to see. And I just think the payoff of all that building up for the payoff, I didn't think the payoff was enough. I wanted a little bit more mayhem. And the ending was, you know, it was a nice little twist. I didn't, you know, expect, you know, that little twist at the end. I didn't see it coming. So, I mean, that was nice. I walked out, you know, there was a lot of dead silence when the credits start rolling. And there was a lot of the audience was like, huh? It's like, that was it. And so I was kind of surprised with the, you know, the ratings and the scoring and being so high, because I didn't think it was that good to the point where the ratings would be that high.
Lots of people love it. So I recommend it. It's definitely worth checking out. It's
on Shudder.
Yeah. I know I've reading online, lots and lots of people really love it. So it's definitely something. Don't take our word for it. I mean, yeah. I'm not giving it a bad, I gave it 3 star cuts. So it's definitely entertaining. So check it out. You might love it. I know some people really did love it. It just wasn't quite there for me, and it sounds like for Mark. but
yeah, it's about 2.5 for me, 2.5 cuts.
And then the last thing I saw that was new was Immaculate. I saw that yesterday, and ooh, that was a good one, very good. It is kind of the idea of the of an Immaculate Conception, and there's this girl played by Sydney Sweeney who goes to a convent that's a very remote, very private convent in, I believe it's in Italy. Yeah, Italy, out in the countryside. And it's an interesting film. Again, it was one that I was hoping for a little bit more from, but I did love it in the end because Sydney Sweeney's performance in the last act of this movie was off the hook, and I thought she did an amazing job. And really, if without her, it probably wouldn't have been as good of a movie. But her performance was spectacular, and I thought a pretty shocking ending. So I definitely recommend it. I was in and out of it a little bit as it was going, not because it was boring or anything, because there were some parts that I thought they should have gotten a little more exploitation in this, a little more retro and kind of the nunsploitation. They were trying to be a little too mainstream when I think it really wanted to be a little more over the top. They could have gone further and it would have been, I think, a little more stylized, and I think it would have suited it better. But as it is, it's still a really good, strong movie, and I thought that the last act definitely pulled it off, and I thought it stuck the landing, and it was a pretty shocking ending, like I said. So definitely worth checking out. I do recommend it, and this one I gave 3.5 cuts, and it's in, well, right now pretty much everything's in my top 10 for the year because I haven't seen that many movies of 2024 yet. But I don't know that it's going to stay in my top 10, but it's definitely one I think will be in a lot of people's top 10s. So I do recommend that one. So overall, pretty good viewings. I you know, even though I didn't love Late Night with the Devil as much as I wanted to, I still enjoyed it, and I really liked Love Lies Bleeding, even though I don't know that it's really horror. And I thought Monolith was good, and Wrath of Becky was a lot of fun. I think, Joe, you saw Wrath of Becky, right? Because you liked the Becky movies.
I liked them both, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Quite a bit, yeah.
Awesome. So that brings us to our theme of the week, which is my pick, and that is medieval horror. And I wish I had some medieval music, but I really couldn't find anything suitable enough. What's that?
It's kind of like, you know, marching, you know. Big fat horses! Big fat horses! Get some coconut.
Oh, there you go, Joe. That's good, like, medieval tavern music.
It actually was the old Irish Spring commercial.
All right. Well, it wasn't medieval tavern music.
Irish Spring, clean as a whistle.
Irish Spring, clean as a whistle. Spring,
clean as a whistle.
Oh, God.
How does that go again? Do it again.
Rewind it, and you can listen to it.
Yeah, you can listen to it again, Mark.
You know what? When Irish Spring starts giving us money, when Irish Spring starts sponsoring our show, we'll do it as many times as they want.
There you go. So, yes, I chose medieval horror because there are two genres that I really love in movies and books, and that is fantasy and horror. I love both of those. In my books, they're especially in the Devil's Glen books. There's a lot of fantasy involved in my, I like mixing fantasy and horror, not so much in The Last House, but I grew up watching Excalibur, the original Lord of the Rings animated Ralph Bakshi movie, and The Hobbit. Well, I think that was Ralph Bakshi, right? With The Hobbit.
Yes.
And then Lord of the Rings was, I can't remember who did the original animated. Let me look it up. Here it is. It is Ralph Bakshi. Ralph Bakshi did the original animated one too. And then, of course, playing Dungeons and Dragons. So medieval stuff was always, and La Morte d'Arthur, the book, and of course, Lord of the Rings. I've read Lord of the Rings numerous times. So I'm a sucker for medieval. I liked all these movies. Gretel and Hansel isn't really, I guess, medieval, but it sort of has some medieval ideas behind it, I guess.
There's a bow and arrow.
There's a bow and arrow. Yeah. So anyway, that's what I chose them. So the first movie that I would like to talk about is from 2010, and that is Black Death, directed by Christopher Smith, starring Sean Bean, a pretty good cast, Sean Bean, Eddie Redmayne, Carice Van Houten, I think his name is Tim McInerney. Or no, I'm sorry. What's the guy's name? Oh, John Lynch. He was from that movie with Daniel Day-Lewis. In the Name of the Father. He's great. Daniel Steiner. It's a really good cast. And this is, as the plague decimates medieval Europe, rumors circulate of a village immune from the plague. There is talk of a necromancer who leads the village and is able to raise the dead. A fearsome knight, played by Sean Bean, as I think he was designed to play a knight. He played two of the most famous of recent times, Boromir from Lord of the Rings, and he played Ned Stark in Game of Thrones. There's a few Game of Thrones actors in this movie as well. Joined by a cohort of soldiers and a young monk, are charged by the church to investigate. Their journey is filled with danger, but upon entering this village, their true horror begins. So they go to a village where there isn't a plague, but they have suspicion that there's some witchcraft or black magic going on that is causing plague everywhere else and not there. So they go in to investigate, and they wind up with more on their hands than they are bargaining for. So I thought it was pretty interesting. I like Eddie Redmayne in it a lot. He plays a monk who is sort of a fallen monk. He's got a girlfriend that he's had sex with and that he's hoping to meet up with. I think he could have found a better way to leave the monastery than to join this ragtag group of mercenaries. But at any rate, I thought this was I enjoyed this when I saw it. I saw this a couple years ago, and I really did enjoy it. So, Mark, what did you think of Black Death?
Yeah, it's another Sean Bean film where he dies in it. 25 times he has died on film and television. Now, granted, you know, he's been in tons of film, but, you know, it's a stigma that seems to humorously always follow him. He always dies in his films. I wasn't really caring for this film too much. It was another, you know, we need to go on a quest to find a necromancer, which is fine with me as long as, you know, their traveling company is like interesting. And I didn't think any of the people, you know, with Sean Bean and Eddie Redmayne were interesting. I didn't know any of their names. Not much was really known about them. And, you know, it didn't get interesting until like the end. And then when they're like executing everybody, it's, you know, they're choosing one by one. It's like, oh, pick that guy. And he's going, I'm ready. I'm ready. It's like, well, I'm ready for you to die too, because I have really no feelings for this character. Yeah, it's Sean Bean's, you know, fine in it. But yeah, he's playing the same character as he did as Ned Stark in Game of Thrones and Boromir and Fellowship of the Ring. So it's the same thing, you know. It's like, yeah, he does an A+ on that character, but it's the same character that I've seen over and over again. I wish, you know, his character was somewhat a little bit different. Eddie Redmayne was great. He's always, you know, he's a Academy Award winner, and so he was great in it. However, with the epilogue, you know, started with Osmond becoming the dark, handsome, forbidding, obsessed witch hunter. I thought that was really interesting, and I wish that this film was more condensed and I got more of the story of the ending with Eddie Redmayne when he was possessed of finding this witch, and all he's seeing is this you know, this woman, and she wasn't even a witch. She was just a normal person. It was, which I also liked about this film, because it was more grounded and realistic. There was no hocus pocus. It was all about, you know, religion and Christianity and the effect that it has on, you know, the world. And
well, I mean, she did bring somebody back to life.
No, that was fake. That was fake. They just drugged her up.
Did they say that? I don't remember that.
Yeah. Part. Yeah. She said, no, we just drugged her. And, and so that's why she was like all, you know, just, she was drugged up in that hut when he came in, and she's just, you know, she was just out of it. And that was kind of cool. It's like he killed her when she was just drugged. And so that's what, you know, possessed him to find this, you know, woman again. And all he can see is, you know, that so-called witch. And that's all the, you know, when he sees a woman, he just sees that face, and he's just innocently, you know, or just killing innocent, you know, women left and right. And I thought that was a great ending. It was just morbid, but I wanted to see more of that. I found that more interesting than so much of like the first and like middle half, like that big fight scene at the beginning. I thought I was watching that Lucy Lawless film. Or a TV show? What was that? Sonya or Xenia? Whatever
Xena.
It was.
Xena.
So no, I mean, it was okay. I was just more fascinated, and I just wanted to see the ending, the epilogue, just continue more. I was invested. I would want to see another hour of it, just with that, you know, plot of going on. So yeah, it was fine for me. It was fine.
Joe, what did you think?
I want to preface this by saying Medieval's not really my bag. I tried to like this. There are others out of these five that I really liked. This was not one of them. I was kind of bored from the beginning. I have this note. I'm 30 minutes in and I'm still waiting for something of interest to happen. I thought the story was a little slow paced. I couldn't really get behind a whole lot of the characters. I also have issues with this whole, that woman over there, she looked at me sideways. She's a witch. Oh, all right, let's kill her. Although the one thing that I really appreciated was the birth of the first pickup line ever. When our band of cohorts goes to that island or that town where nobody's got the plague, and this woman comes out, the blonde haired woman who's later on, she's a witch. And, she said, Lengiva, I believe is her name. When Lengiva arrives and says, "I'll tend to your wounds," one of the guys replies back, "I'll tend to your wound." And I'm like, that's the best pickup line ever. And it was like the first one in history. I loved that. Yeah, I mean, by the time somebody got drawn and quartered, then I was like, all right, cool, more of that. I want to see that. But that was, in my opinion, a little too late. And then with the whole thing of Eddie Redmayne being the badass at the end, I thought it was hilarious. But then he just sort of continues on the path of, that's a woman. She's got to be a witch. Mm-hmm. Let's kill her too, and let's kill them all. So
I love that part.
Not my thing. So
yeah. All right.
Well, what'd you think, Matt?
I already said.
Well, I know, but
I said at the beginning. I didn't love it, but I liked it. Yeah, I think it's. I saw it a couple years ago and liked it.
You thought it was the best movie I ever made.
His greatest movie ever made.
No, that's coming up.
Ten times better than Maverick.
Yeah.
God damn it! It's not even close.
Do all the math.
Let's see. What's the next one? The next one is, this one I know Joe's going to like. This one is this one came out just a couple months
2011?
After Black Death from 2011. And let me just say right now, there is no better medieval buddy cop duo than Ron Perlman and Nicolas Cage in 2011's Season of the Witch.
You are 100% right.
14th century crusader returns with his comrade to a homeland devastated by the Black Plague. The church commands the two knights to transport a witch to a remote abbey where monks will perform a ritual in hopes of ending the pestilence. One thing I wondered about this is, why did they have to transport her there? Why didn't they just have the monks from the abbey bring the book to the abbey they were at and do it there? But I guess then we wouldn't have a movie. And Nicolas
Cage.
Well,
they were dead. They were dead. Remember, at the end, the monks were already dead.
Wait. Well, but still, like, why wouldn't they have thought of that? Like, why don't we send for the people at the abbey didn't know that they were dead.
Yeah.
Then we wouldn't have had a movie, and then we wouldn't have been able to find all that out. But
we wouldn't need Nicolas Cage.
And we wouldn't have had Nicolas Cage in the movie. So this, of course, stars Nicolas Cage, Ron Perlman, who is there's absolutely no Nicolas Cage at least is trying to make some of his words sound like he's British. Ron Perlman is not. He sounds like he's from Chicago or something like that. He sounds like he made no effort at all. Christopher Lee's in it, which is. Gives some gravitas to the proceedings. And the film debut of Claire Foy, which at first I didn't recognize her because she was all dirty and everything. And then I was like, man, she looks familiar. And I looked her up, and this was her big screen debut.
Which one was that? Was that the blonde?
No, she was the witch.
Oh, the she witch. Was the witch.
In the cage.
Yeah, in the cage. Yeah, Claire Foy.
She was in the Rage Cage.
Yeah. She was in the Rage Cage. So let me look at this thing. Black Death. Wait a minute. Nope. Season of the Witch. There we go. Wrong one. Nicolas Cage learned how to ride the horse for this movie, by the way, Joe. I figured you'd like that. He was also attracted to. He also was attracted to this because he saw it as a tribute to the movies of Roger Corman. Which, Joe, putting those two names in the same sentence, Nicolas Cage and Roger Corman, is music to Joe's ears. And then he was very happy that Christopher Lee was going to be in it. And let's see. Yeah, this is one I thought, okay, let me preface this by saying that it's not a great movie by any means, but I had fun. Like, this was sort of the opposite of Black Death, where Black Death is more slow and brooding and grim, trying to be anyway. I think Season of the Witch is just trying to have fun, and I enjoyed it. I am a sucker for this kind of thing, going on a quest sort of situation. So I had fun with it. No, it's not great. No, you shouldn't run right out and rent this movie or actually, you can watch it on Peacock or Tubi, but it's if you have some time on your hands and you really are
stuck in an airport with nothing to do.
If you're a Nicolas Cage completist and you want to see him in long hair and an outfit, check it out, because I think you will. If you allow yourself, you have a little bit of fun with this. Joe, I want to hear what you have to say about the Rage Cage in this one, because I'm pretty sure I kept hearing your voice in the back of my head as I was watching.
Me too.
Luckily for you, I took your advice and I did have some fun with this, because my first note is another great Nick Cage hairdo. But my second note is, I can't tell if I'm watching Rage Cage and Ron Perlman or if I'm watching Tango and Cash. Is this like the first buddy film ever? Especially when they're fighting in battle and they've got that scene where one of them slaying somebody and another one slaying the other. And then all of a sudden they're like back to back.
Yeah,
and then they make some little quip to each other, and then they get back in there, and
I know, I love that, because it's like, it seems like old times, huh? Those kinds of lines.
I'm gonna bite. You're buying the drinks.
Yeah.
speaking of lines and being authentic, I loved some of these quotes here, like, "Let's get the hell out of here." I'm sure that's how they talked in the 14th century, as well as "I've saved your ass 100 times."
Oh, I forgot to mention Stephen Graham was in this too. And I really like Stephen Graham. He plays a lot of character parts. He usually plays a gangster in Boardwalk Empire. He played Al Capone. I really like him. So anyway, go ahead.
I'm not going to bother trying to find logic in the story. There's lots of holes. Like, I have no idea why it was important that we spent 20 minutes watching them cross a bridge. I don't see how that moved the story along anywhere.
It did drag a bit there.
Yeah. That was like two-thirds of the movie.
Yeah. Well, why didn't they just have the four horses drag it in the first place?
Yeah.
Oh, my
God. There was many solutions to that paltry problem, but I'm also not going to get into the incredibly dumb character design for that final demon. With the way it looked like something right out of 84 Gremlins.
The CG in this was bad.
It was pretty bad, yeah. But yeah. At least Nicolas Cage got to see that girl naked before he died. That's all that really matters in this. Some of the actual practical effects, some of the practical prosthesis, the makeup effects, like on Christopher Lee with all that gross stuff all over his eyes while he's talking. Yeah. Some of that stuff is very well done. That was disgusting to look at. And it's got to be even harder for him to emote through that. So I will tip my hat to whoever designed that. But
then that made all the CG that they had even worse.
Look worse. Yeah.
They had pretty good practical stuff, gore and makeup. But then they had like really bad CGI.
Yeah, they flushed it all in the toilet once, you know, they flipped on their MacBook Pro and said, hey, let's make a demon that flies. Yeah, it's not a great movie. It is a fun watch. I would call this, it's the medieval Tango and Cash.
So. Yeah, I loved that Ron Perlman was making no effort to have a British accent. He was like, you know what? Fuck this. Give me a cigar. He almost wanted him to have a cigar in this. But one thing I forgot to mention is that this thing went through, as you might be able to tell when you watch it, it did go through some rough times in pre-production or during production and post-production. As they showed it to test audiences, it surprisingly enough, Joe, didn't test well. Test all that well.
Really?
So
you never can tell with people these days.
Yeah, they had to hire Brett Ratner and his own personal editor to reshoot some stuff and to re-edit some of it and to tighten up the production company was not pleased with the outcome of this film. So
wait, Brett Ratner, that's the director of what?
He directed the remake of Red Dragon, you know. He's done a bunch of stuff. He's kind of a very,
kind of like a Rennie Harlan director.
Maybe. He's very much a generic guy that they hire in to. He's just very economical, and he's not a great director, but
yeah.
Mark, what did
I wanted one last thing. I just wanted to point out, as long as we're pointing out the cast, Robert Sheehan, who played like the squire that sort of like helped him through the end.
Right.
It was very integral in the bridge crossing scene. I think he's very underutilized. I've seen him in other things and I think he's fantastic. He plays Klaus in the Umbrella Academy. Which he's fantastic in there. So I would have used him more. Oh, fantastic series on Netflix. So anyway, that's it. I'm done. The floor is now Mark's. I yield my time to Mark.
What did you think of Season of the Witch?
Well, I think your obsession with Nicolas Cage is starting to match my obsession with Corey Feldman, Matt. You're starting to like do our completion of all the Nicolas Cage films. I don't know how many Nicolas Cage films we've watched.
I actually thought about you know, we should all add a Nicolas Cage movie into all, see if we can find a Nicolas Cage movie for each of our picks, but Joe got a pained look on his face.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's possible, but he's definitely.
Well, I know what my next theme is, and I'm trying to think. No, it wouldn't fit. So sorry.
Yeah. Well, that's fine. I wouldn't spring that on you in the last minute. Mark, go ahead.
Let's start off with the beginning of the film where you have three women who are about to be hanged off the bridge. Two women are pleading for their lives, telling them they're not witches, and the third witch with a blind eye says, "You're gonna burn in hell." So I wonder which one is the witch. Fuck it, let's just hang all three of them. at least you saw the Hound from Game of Thrones at the beginning of this film. He was at the very beginning when he was on the bridge. He saw him for, he had one line and that was it. It would have been great to see him throughout the film. But he just started with Game of Thrones, so I regress. And then you had this the spectacular view of Nicolas Cage with flowing blonde hair. You know, just his whole face is glowing. You know, he's looking at the sand and that huge army. And he says, or Ron Perlman says, I'll take the 300 on the left and you take the 300 on the right. That's insane. There's like thousands of them there. It's like their math is completely off. And I'll buy the first round. Yeah, so it's like that buddy cop Tango and Cash shit. and the dialogue, man, this film really pissed me off. It was nice to see Tommy from Snatch, that actor. He's great. But you hardly ever saw him. Ron Perlman blaming him, you know, it's like, I can't believe you brought us to this bridge. He's going, well, the castle's right on the other side. It's like, I brought you here. It's not the bridge fault. I don't know. This film just drove me crazy. I don't have much more to say about it. I mean, it was a giggle a lot. I giggled a lot, but other than that, I don't know. I've had my fill of Nicolas Cage for a while. I think we should ban Nicolas Cage for at least a year or something, or a couple months. I've had enough of Nicolas Cage. So yeah, that's about all I got, man. That's all I got. And why didn't the witch just fly to the castle when she escaped the first time from the cage? Like, she could turn into a demon. Why didn't she just fly to the castle?
There would
she had to be brought there.
Oh yeah, that's right. She had to be brought there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
God damn it.
And you know, I'm not even going to go into why she was able to burn all the copies of the books, but she couldn't burn the original. Anyway, it's not worth it.
Yeah, it was great to see Ron Perlman die and then come back to life at the end just to be incinerated. I mean, you needed that. Damn, Matt.
All right. So the next one is from 2020. And that is Gretel and Hansel, directed by Osgood Perkins. And this is a long time ago in a distant fairy tale countryside. A young girl leads her little brother into a dark wood in desperate search of food and work, only to stumble upon a nexus of terrifying evil. This stars Sophia Lillis, Samuel Leakey, Alice Creege, and it's mostly a three-person, one-setting movie. They go out into the woods a little bit, I guess, or, you know, fairly often, but it's all around this woman's, this witch's home. And that Alice Creege, I don't know if I'm pronouncing her name, but she is so creepy in this as the witch. She's a really creepy witch. She's in a lot of stuff. She's in Silent Hill. She's in Texas Chainsaw Massacre, the new one CineScare certified. She's in Chariots of Fire, believe it or not. She's in Star Trek First Contact, which I always think of Mark because that commercial was playing like nonstop when we first moved room together in Chicago. I don't know if you remember that. She was also in Sleepwalkers.
Yes.
Yeah. So, and it's such an interesting story. I loved the setting. I loved the sets. I loved the design. I had never seen it before. This is my first watch. Was this your guys' first watch of this too?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I've been up and down on Oz Perkins. He's Anthony Perkins' son. And I've been a little up and down on him because I saw one movie called I Am the Pretty Thing That Lives in the House, and I was super excited about it. And then it turned out to be really, really, really slow burn, and I just couldn't get into it. And then he did The Black Coat's Daughter, which I absolutely loved, and we all really enjoyed that one. That is definitely CineScare certified.
Great movie.
Yeah, and he's got a new movie coming out that I just saw the previews for called Long Legs, and that looks interesting. But this one, I really enjoyed this. I thought this was great. I thought it wrapped up perfectly. I thought it was satisfying. It took its time, but I didn't feel like it was slow. It was only 90 minutes long, 87 minutes long. So I really enjoyed this. Mark, what did you think of Gretel and Hansel?
Well, like you said, it's not so much medieval, but the classic fairy tale of Hansel and Gretel. And right. I enjoyed this film. The witch played by Alice, what do you say, Krieg? Krieg or?
Yeah, something like that. I'm not sure.
Yeah, Alice Krieg or Krieg. I just said it twice. But I thought she was phenomenal. And the cinematography and production design was top notch. Excuse me. I was, I don't know. The three characters, Gretel, Hansel, and the witch, I don't know. I seem to be aware that they all did have like different accents, especially Gretel, which kind of, I don't know if I'm the only person that caught it, but it kind of like took me out of it a little bit. But yeah, the Gretel's accent was very alarmingly American. Hansel's definitely, I didn't think was. Also, most of the shots I noticed was centered and like your eyes just weren't moving. Like a lot of the shots were centered. And I don't know, it just seemed a little bit tiresome. Like the set designs were great. It was beautiful to watch, but everything was centered. Camera didn't seem to be moving a lot, and I didn't like that as much. And also, I didn't think the characters were fleshed out, which is a shame because, I mean, it's a bare-boned plot, which, you know, I'm sure everyone knows the story of Hansel and Gretel, and I felt that characters could have been a little bit more developed, a little bit more I don't know. I mean, I loved what was going on with the witch and Gretel. I liked how the story involved with Gretel becoming, you know, a witch. You know, she has like the second sight. You know, they're born from the same blood, like as what she said. But overall, I did enjoy the movie. I thought it was beautiful to watch. So, I mean, my eyes didn't get too tired from just staring and my eyes not moving because the camera really didn't move. But I, all in all, I really enjoyed it. I'll recommend it for sure.
Yeah. Yeah, it definitely wasn't medieval, but it was sort of in a fairy tale land. So it was sort of some of that feel. I liked the accents because it reminded me of Amadeus, where nobody has all the actors just use their native accent. You know, Tom Hulce was an American accent in like, so I liked that and I thought it fit for their characters. You know, I'm not sure what you mean by the camera movement, but
it's just a lot of shots were centered. It's like everything was dead center. Like the, I think going that was to the
probably a director, you know, stylistic choice, but I had no problem with that at all.
It just distracted me a little bit.
What did you think? Joe, what did you think?
Joe, what'd you think?
I was Joe. Over the moon. Am I on?
Yeah, go ahead.
Yes.
Okay. I was over the moon in love with this film, and I still am. I think it's fantastic. This was a tie for my favorite out of the five. Nice. I thought the acting was tremendous, but the acting takes a backseat to what I saw on the screen. I thought the visuals were gorgeous. I thought the cinematography was fantastic. I love the architectural style of the witch's house. It's so off-putting because you're expecting everything to be like a, you know, made by hand, carved out of wood, that type of. No, this had like straight edges and the architectural style was so modern, stuck in the middle of this forest. Just that in itself is so off-putting. The acting of what's her name? Sophia Lillis, the girl, she's tremendous in this film. I'm trying to go through some of my notes. witch's house is very off-putting. Oh, even the sound design in this film was mm-hmm. creepy and off-putting. There's the scene where Hansel is sharpening, he's by himself and he's sharpening the handsaw. The sound that comes off of that, how it's echoing through the forest is just creepy as all get out. I love the color palettes that this guy's using. Mm-hmm. And the thing, I just had to look it up because I forgot the name of the film. But when Gretel finds that room to go downstairs, most of the time she thinks she's dreaming, it really reminded me of The Cell, that Jennifer Lopez movie, with those huge fabrics that go from floor to these, you know, overarching ceilings and stuff. It's just creepy as all get it. My one complaint about this entire film is when you see the witch as a young witch, she has very neatly done symmetrical tattoos, which I thought was completely unnecessary. I don't want to have to think of the witch going into town and somebody, you know, drawing a pentagram on her arm. I know she's a witch. You don't have to draw a pentagram on her bicep to tell me that's what she is. You take that off, and I would have loved this movie 10 times better. But it was it's a tremendous watch. I highly recommend it.
Awesome.
Yeah. The Cell, I definitely reminded me of The Cell too, Joe. Yeah.
All right, moving on to our next movie, and this is from 2018, and this is The Headhunter, starring Christopher Rye, Cora Kaufman, and Aisha Ricketts. They're really, it's mostly just one guy, though, and then some heads more than anything. On the outskirts of a kingdom, a quiet but fierce medieval warrior protects the realm from monsters and the occult. His gruesome collection of heads is missing only one, the monster that killed his daughter years ago. Driven by a thirst for revenge, he travels wild expanses on horseback. When his second chance arrives, it's in a way far more horrifying than he ever imagined. So this is, I love this movie. This was my number like four movie of 2019, I think. It's so spare. It's only 72 minutes long, and it feels like it probably got stretched a little bit to make it a feature. They could have probably made it a long short and it might be a little more effective, but I still was there for it the whole time. I love the main guy, Christopher Rieg. I've never seen him in anything before or since, but I thought he was great in this. I thought they did a lot with very little. This whole thing was made for $30,000, and they did quite a bit with that small of a budget, and it looks good. I like the house that he lives in. I like the heads, the whole concept of the heads, and the thing that he keeps slathering on his body. And I'm assuming one of those potions helps him have some strength. I don't really get the gist of that. But it obviously he has something that helps him heal his wounds. And he's basically just only living to find this thing. And I don't want to give away the ending just because I don't think this is one that many people have seen, but I thought that the ending was perfect. Joe, what did you think of The Headhunter?
I'll start backwards. The ending is perfect. There's one thing they could have done at the ending that I thought they were going to do. I thought his eyes were going to move, and they didn't do that. And that made me so happy. Just leave it alone.
Yeah,
no, I won't go into any more detail than that.
Yeah, that would have ruined it.
So anyway, that gray glop that's in the jars that he's keeping, from what I was able to research, it's supposed to have a healing factor. Yeah. But it also apparently can restore life in greater amounts, which is where the accident happens. Love this film. Tremendous. This is a great example of tremendous editing. They cut out all the crap. They didn't try to force this into an hour and a half long film.
Exactly.
However long it was, every you hang on every second that's on the screen.
Yeah.
And I want to tip my hat to Troy Smith, who did special effects, and Andre Braven, who did costumes. His costume is tremendous.
Great costume.
I want to point out.
I don't know. I honestly don't know how they did this with a $30,000 budget. There's no acting, but that even that creature, I mean, not acting, but there's no big battle scenes. And the only real fight scene is that creature in the cave that he finds. But even that, I don't know how they made it. I'm sure it's a combination of things, but in CG maybe and some practical, but that alone would have had to have been expensive. So I'm assuming a lot of people worked on this that didn't get really paid very much at all.
Yeah. I do want to, these are new kids on the block doing this stuff. The Troy Smith, who did the special effects, he only worked on four other films, and the Andre Braven, who did the costumes, he's only got one other credit. He worked on one other film. That's it.
Wow. Yeah.
These guys have got a huge career ahead of them.
The director did Thanksgiving.
Yeah. Thanksgiving.
Thanksgiving 3 and Critters Bounty Hunter.
The fucking turkey that I've watched. The killing turkey. And it's horrible. And he directed this fucking film? Yeah. Like, what? Okay.
I wanted to point this out, too. When I do these recordings, I have another screen off to the side, and I usually have IMDb up with the movies that we're going to talk about so I can refer to some of my notes. And while I'm waiting, there's usually trailers for other films that pertain to the ones that we're watching that just show up on the screen. And I watched the trailer for Thanksgiving 3, which is called The Raunchiest Puppet Movie Ever. And it says it's the first movie to be so daring, it skipped its own sequel. So it went right from Thanksgiving 1 to Thanksgiving 3. I may have to watch this.
Yeah, I gotta watch both of those.
Oh,
but
boy.
To get back to this film, when the father realizes that the glop or whatever that he spilled onto this spider is regenerative, and he just mutters the word fuck. Mm-hmm. That was the, you know, he doesn't say much in this film at all. And that was the one thing I'm like, you probably shouldn't have said that. Just a groan or something like that. But
yeah,
the word fuck just sort of took me out of it. But anyway, I love the great creature effects too. All of the heads that are up on the wall are fantastic. Yeah. The one that's attacking him in the cave, I wish I could have seen more detail, but it's dark in there, and I'm sure that's done by design, and I'm sure that had something to do with that $30,000 budget.
Totally.
Because if it's in shadows, you don't have to get very detailed.
Right.
Yeah. And I had this, my last list was, I love the twist at the end, but I can't get into it. But the most grueling scene in this entire movie to watch is him trying to pee.
Right. Oh. Yeah.
The kidney stones.
Good God. Yeah. Whatever he's got, urinary tract infection, kidney stones, blood in his urine. I don't know what it is, but I was crossing my legs so hard when that scene happened. It just felt so bad for him. So
yeah, you get the sense that he is out for revenge, and he's really put his whole life into that. That's what, he only exists for that revenge at this point.
Yeah. Great film.
Mark. Good. I'm glad you liked it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Honestly, that peeing scene was brutal, like, to watch, because I've dealt with kidney stones, and that was like one of the most realistic kidney scene, like, peeing scenes I've seen since Deadwood. If you ever seen that show Deadwood with Swearinger pissing out kidney stones, that's what it feels like. I fucking love this film. I've never seen this film before, never heard of this film before, and I love it. I love everything about it, because this is a wonderful film that I enjoy. Films that there's barely any dialogue in it. Films that do this well, you can really immerse, you know, the audience in a different way, like you're in a trance, or dare I say, under a spell. I always love the fact that we don't get to see the battles with the monsters. I feel like, you know, if you did see the battles with the monsters every time he went out, it would take away from the film. And that you don't get to see these battles until the very end with, you know, the main monster, it's just great. And the traumatic scene, the most horrific scene, in my opinion, was when he came home from a fight and he takes off his armor. And he's got the big slash on his arm and he's got to put it. I mean, he looked like he was in so much pain. I was grimacing. I'm like, oh, my God, this is a horrific battle scar. I'm like, what the hell is this mud going to do? But it was great seeing him, like, grind up, you know, all this, like, this potion, this elixir that he was doing, you know, for the healing. And the fact that that fucking door, that window that kept banging, you know, to bring his demise was horrific. You know, I mean, it's like, just if he only fixed that door. I think he was trying to fix it when he was, like, sawing it, you know, right, just to fix that door because, you know, something spilled over the first time. And he started, you know, seemed like he was making a new window, and then it happened a second time. And if he just waited a little longer when he smashed that spider and the spider came back to life, I mean, that's just the whole premise. When that dropped down, pretty much this monster is going to be an immortal. This Christopher Wright guy, I guess he's like the go-to for like Viking films or whatnot. That's what he's like mostly known for. He's great at it. Great. And that armor that he wears, that is the coolest freaking armor I've ever seen in any film ever. It is beautiful. That helmet that he wears, I want it. I want it so bad. The axe that he had, says everything was so crisp and clean. The cinematography was wonderful. Everything about this, I mean, this is a 5 cut for me, or 4 cut, whatever highest rating. I love this film. I watched it twice and I bought it. I bought this freaking movie.
Nice.
It's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah, that I agree. The armor and everything is really super cool. And
so cool.
Yeah, and he kind of reminds me of that guy from Parks and Rec. Guy's name?
Ron Swanson.
Yeah. He reminds me of him, but you know, in a medieval sense. I'm glad you guys
will run.
Yeah, it's not it's not boring at all. It's like if you see this film and you think it's I don't know, for me, it's like when I watch like YouTube videos, when I'm not watching like horror, you know, videos or whatnot, I like watching, you know, people building cabins, and there's no like dialogue. They're just chopping wood, building cabins, fishing and whatnot. And this is what it kind of was, but it was just a lot more interesting and just so much to it. And the heads on the wall. I mean, how many lines was in this film? What, 6?
Not many. Yeah.
Not many. Yeah. Not many. And you don't need it. You don't need it. It's just, what a great film. So thanks for the recommendation, Matthew.
Well, I'm glad you guys liked it because was really the reason I picked this pick. I was like, I saw this on my, because this was my number 4 movie of 2019. And so I was like, oh, I got to figure out a way to get this. And then I came up with Medieval Horror. But this was the one that, you know, wasn't the reason I picked it, but it was the one that got me to thinking about this pick. So
never even heard of this film.
Yeah, it's great.
Ugh. $30,000? Fuck.
$30,000. I know.
$30,000.
Goes to show you what you can do with, you know, nowadays with a little bit of money. Like if you have the people and you've got some money. I mean, I don't know what they shot this on, but I'm assuming they shot, you know, probably a similar camera to what Vincent DeSanti uses for Never Hike Alone or whatever, probably a Red Monstro or one of those, a Red or something like that. They, you know, and you can get one of those I mean,
how much did Dead Hooker in a Trunk cost?
Probably not much, but.
Oh, $3,000.
$3,000, yeah.
$3,000.
Hey, well, this is at least 10 times better.
Oh, yeah, totally. At least. I'm not sure what the number is. Yeah. So, all right.
That fucking armor is so cool.
our last pick of this one is from 1992, Army of Darkness, directed by Sam Raimi. And this is part three of the Evil Dead, original Evil Dead franchise. It was originally supposed to be called Evil, actually Medieval. They went through a bunch of titles. One of them, which I wish they'd stuck with, was Medieval, the Medieval Dead, which, you know, I thought that would have been funny. And actually this in was England, that was the name. It was Army of Darkness, the Medieval Dead. Go ahead, Joe.
And in Japan, it was called Captain Supermarket.
I know. Isn't that hilarious? Ridiculous. This, of course, stars Bruce Campbell. Boy, I can really see how – I don't know if he did or not, but I have to believe that Jim Carrey – stole a lot of Ace Ventura from Ash, you know, because there's a lot, especially in this movie.
Mask?
Yeah, well, no, Ace Ventura. But like just his acting and then Groovy and all of those kind of one-liners that he has in a lot of those early in those 90s Jim Carrey movies, they seem to be taken from Bruce Campbell in these Evil Dead movies. I don't know if that's the case or not, but boy, it seems coincidental. Yeah, go ahead, Joe.
They were really pulling for some sort of catchphrase. They wanted something for the t-shirt.
Yeah, totally.
Groovy was it. Yeah.
Groovy. Hands down. Yeah. But this also stars Bruce Campbell and Embeth Davis, who would go on to be the maid in Schindler's List, and then a whole bunch of other actors. This was a lot of fun. Bridget Fonda, in fact, is in this one as well.
Yeah.
Ted Raimi appears as a couple different characters, one at the grocery store, and then he was also one of the knights in the castle. Speaking of the castle, my wife, Michelle, and I think her sister and some of their friends, this was shot near where they lived. There's a lot of productions out there by where they live because it's very desert looking. And this was shot there and they actually went there. No one was around. They found they had heard that there was still a set out there from that they had never torn down. And so they went out and climbed around on the set of this. The catapult was still there. The facade of everything was still there. She was like, yeah, you just walk around and on this set that they didn't tear it down for a long time, probably because they weren't sure if they would have to go back there for reshoots. But there also was nothing blocking anybody. I don't think they had to climb over anything to get in there. They just found out where it was. And it was also shot. I can't remember the area, but it's part of it. You could see if you remember the Flintstones movie from. Was that the 90s?
With John Goodman.
Yeah, with John Goodman. There's an area out there called Vasquez Rocks that's very you can see it from the freeway. You drive by and you can see these rocks and they use that for the Flintstones and Barty Rubble's homes are right there. And they shot part of this at Vasquez Rocks too. I think the part where he goes to get the book was in there. But this was my first time seeing this movie, believe it or not. And I had a blast with it. I enjoyed it a lot. This was a lot of fun. It's definitely does not take itself seriously at all. The whole crazy thing where he splits in half and becomes two people was not what I was expecting. It was hilarious as hell. And I thought it was just a lot of fun. So, Mark, what are your thoughts? I know you like Army of Darkness. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I love the Army of Darkness because I love the Three Stooges. And, you know, there's a lot of...
Very slapstick.
Very slapstick. It's a cult classic. You know, my brother... Army of Darkness was the first Evil Dead film I saw because my brother... just fell in love with it. He saw it in the movie theater and he's going, oh my God, it's so funny. It's so great. And I said, isn't that from like the Evil Dead? So isn't it supposed to be scary? He's going, no, it's not scary at all. You should see it. So yeah, Army of Darkness was the first Evil Dead film I ever saw. And so like what a change when I saw Evil Dead and then Evil Dead 2. It was just mind-blowing that Army of Darkness was even made, because it was so like just out of from what we saw before, especially from the original. I mean, Evil Dead 2 had like tons of slapstick and whatnot, but this just went full on in.
Yeah, Evil Dead 2 was way more, closer to this tone. The first one was trying to be scarier, but Evil Dead 2 definitely did not take itself as seriously.
Yeah, absolutely. It's Bruce Campbell's one-liners and his delivery that makes me chuckle. You know, the closed door, you know, what are you, raised in a barn, you know? Just his machoism is so charming, and I just love it. You know,
give me some sugar, baby.
Give me some sugar, baby. Yeah, you're a lot, honey, or like, baby, you're a lot prettier before or something. It's just so great. Yeah. Also, yeah, young Bridget Fonda. I forgot she was even in it, and I mean, she was hardly in it, but she was just blown up at the time. That was like during when Singles came out.
Singles,
the same year. Yeah, that's when she really blew up. She hasn't worked since 2001, by the way. She married Danny Elfman, and she's just sucking up that money. I've seen this film like 10 times, maybe 15 times. I don't know how many times I've seen this film. I don't know. I don't know if I'm ready to see this film ever again, though. I think I'm good. I think it was a nice send off, you know, and it was good that I watched this film for the podcast, because I don't think I would ever like really watch this film again. There's just so many other films out there, and I've seen it so many times. So this was like a nice send off. Like, I kind of knew this was going to be the last time I'm going to see this film. And it's just great. You know, it's just, I love, you know, how it's so influenced with the Sinbad and the Seventh Voyage, with all the skeletons and the stop motion and how they did that. How much that must have cost is crazy, but it's just a fun film. It's great, but I'm happy to, you know, close the book on this one for me. So yeah.
Joe, what are your thoughts on Army of Darkness?
I'm kind of in the same boat as Mark. I had this on VHS when I was in college, and I probably watched it to death. I was happy to revisit it because I hadn't seen it in so long, but I've, you know, it still holds up. It's still hilarious. I love the running gags throughout the entire franchise about how his girlfriend's always played by a different actress, and the Three Stooges influence. I'm like Mark, I was brought up on it. Even down to where he's laying on the ground and there are skeleton arms like poking at him, and he puts up his own hand in front of his eyeball so he doesn't get poked between the eyes. I mean, that's, he's the, what, fifth Stooge, I think. Anyway, it's fantastic. It's a great watch. Matt, I'm shocked that you've never seen this before.
Yeah, but it's one of those that just slipped through the cracks.
I'm like Mark, I've probably seen this at least 15 times. So, but I can't say enough good things about it. However, I will say, if you haven't seen it, please watch it, because I'm looking at its IMDb page, and apparently it cost $13 million to make, and gross worldwide revenue is $11,500. So this thing lost money. Although I'm sure they haven't factored VHS sales into it since then, but it was worth every penny, in my opinion.
Yeah. Nice. I mean, they use every penny in this film, whatever they had. I mean, the production value, you know, value that is on the screen. I mean, you could see that they put everything they could into this.
Yeah.
You know, I love the little, you know, ashes, you know, the Gulliver's travels, you know, montage and whatnot, and it's a great watch. It's a great watch. I think Joe and I we've seen it so many times, and it was a nice farewell.
I enjoyed it. I don't know if I'll watch it a lot of 15 times, but I'll watch it again at some point.
It was huge back in the 90s.
I know.
Like,
and
like a guaranteed, like, it's like, hey, you want to watch Army of Darkness? Let's do it.
It's one that I always meant to watch. And then I just, it just, I would find other things to watch instead. I just, and as time went on, then I was like, ah, I missed it. I missed my opportunity. So it worked out perfectly for this pick. So, all right. Well, that was my pick. And so the next pick is Joe's. So, Joe, what is your pick? Tell us. We're waiting with bated breath.
Nicolas Cage movies.
Bang, zap, pow. We're going to watch comic book horror films.
Oh. Okay.
All right.
All right. So the first one we're going to watch is, sorry, I wanted to preface this. Sorry, but again, just like last week, there's going to be two movies you guys are going to have to rent. They were essential, though. So first off, we're going to watch 30 Days of Night, which is on Netflix. All of these films that we're going to be watching started off as a comic book or graphic novel.
Perfect.
Okay. So again, 30 Days of Night, which is on Netflix. That's from 2007.
Excellent.
The next thing we're going to watch is a classic from 1981. This is one of your rentals. It's The Swamp Thing.
Okay. With Heather Locklear, right?
No. Or
Heather Thomas.
No. Isn't it?
Oh, no, that's Swamp Thing 2.
It's the chick from year, Joe?
1981.
It's the chick from Escape from New York, right?
And I haven't Creep seen Show. Escape from New York. Yes.
Yes.
From Creepshow. Anyway, the next one we're going to watch is My Friend Dahmer.
Adrian Barbeau. Sorry.
Adrian Barbeau. Thank you. So from 2017, My Friend Dahmer. That's on Hulu, Tubi, Peacock, Freevee. You can find it just about anywhere.
All right.
Our fourth film, starring Johnny Depp, we'll be watching From Hell, which is your other rental.
Beautiful.
Directed by the brothers, yeah.
I was just thinking about this movie the other day, and I was like, you know, I should read that graphic novel.
It's wonderful.
It's really good.
It's thick, too. It's a big one. Yeah, it's big. Anyway, and then the last one we're going to watch, of course, is Constantine from 2005. Mm-hmm. That is on HBO Max.
All right. Excellent.
I was going to throw The Crow in there because I saw that's being remade, but right.
Fuck that trailer. I was a huge fan of the
original one.
What? Yeah. You didn't like the original?
Wasn't a fan of the original and hate the trailer for the new one coming up.
Yeah, the new one looks so bad.
I kind of liked the original, but I didn't quite see why everybody went crazy for it, except for the guy's makeup. He's so super cool looking. But in terms of the movie itself, I thought it was just okay. But,
Roger Ebert and Gene Siskel gave it 2 thumbs up and like 4 stars for that film, which is crazy to even. But I mean, it was because Brandon Lee, you know, passed away. It was like lightning in a box to make it such a successful film.
Lightning in a box.
Lightning in a box. You heard it here first.
Isn't that a thing?
Lightning in a bottle.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I'm glad we caught that because I, as I'm editing, I'll hear Mark say something. I'm like, God damn it, how did we miss that one?
Yeah. Caught that one.
All right. So those sound like some awesome picks. Thank you, Joe.
Yeah.
And please go to www.cinescarehorror.com and look up our merchandise. Also, be on the lookout. This next week, we're supposed to be hearing from like 6 or 7 film festivals. There's a Charlotte Film Festival that actually emailed me today saying that we were an official selection. And then about 20 minutes later, I was about to post it and promote it. 20 minutes later, the guy emailed me back or emailed everyone back and said, sorry, that was a mass email that went out too soon. And somebody, he said, your movies are finalists to be considered to be entered, but we haven't made our final selections yet. So, what happened was he received word from the judges and a list of movies that they are now going to watch and pare down to their official selection. So we made the final cut before. So it was a little,
so you're in like the sweet 16 right now.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So, yeah. But hey, at least we're in the final cut. That's pretty cool. But yeah, hopefully we'll hear from them. I'm glad I didn't post that saying, hey, we did it. And then,
and everybody else in that film fest.
Right. We also official selections of the 40th Film Festival. Film Basement made Jimmy a runner-up for Best Actor in a Horror Film. And congratulations, Jimmy. Oh, that was he's very, very proud of that, as he should be. It made him very happy.
He's very good in it.
Yeah, he's great. And then we were we won Best Horror Short in the South Film Festival. So we still have a bunch of film festivals to go.
We won South by Southwest?
No, not South by Southwest. Yeah, that would be nice.
Southwest Airlines?
No.
Oh.
No, it's called the South Film. Yeah.
Aren't you glad I'm
back? I don't think he was actually making a joke. but we do have this next week. Be on the lookout because we hopefully will hear from about six or seven film festivals this next week, or actually probably five, I guess, because one of them we already heard from that's supposed to announce on the first. That's Chicago Film Festival, so which we already got into. So,
and we'll be there.
Yeah, we will be there. So if you're in Chicago or in the Chicago area, come to the Chicago Horror Film Festival. It is on May 4th and 5th. We will be there. It's at Facets Theater. And we have not heard the schedule yet, but we're supposed to hear the schedule next week. So that will be another thing to look out for. When are we actually screening? Because they have a lot of films to screen. So, and they have, I think, some shorts, including ours, and then some feature lengths. So they've got to squeeze it all into a specific time. So they will let us know, and hopefully we'll find out which day and at what time they'll be showing our movie. All right. Well, I guess that's it. So we'll see you next time.
Good night, everybody.
See anything you like?
Have you all got amnesia? They just cheated us!
They're coming. Get you, Barbara.
We've got a death curse!
It was a shark.
Little pig, let's come in.
We all go a little mad sometimes. What was living behind that boy's eyes was purely and simply evil.
I'm just gonna bash your brains.
Hello, everybody. Did you miss me? It was like lightning in a box.